In order to be able to make sure that anywhere near 30% of the planet is under nature in some form, the scale of action, the scale of the challenge has to be matched by the scale of the action.
Hey everyone, I'm excited to share a new podcast series in partnership with African Parks, Conservation Across Africa. Over the month of June, we sit down with six leaders from African Parks to explore how they're protecting biodiversity in managing some of the most iconic landscapes across the continent. On this episode, we sit down with Peter Fernhead, CEO of African Parks Network, to explore their bold $1 billion commitment to scale conservation efforts across Africa. Recorded live at the Concordia Annual Summit during Climate Week 2024, this conversation unpacks African Parks' mission to grow from 23 protected areas to 30 by 2030, one of the most ambitious conservation efforts in the world. So join us as we dive into what it means to deliver conservation at scale. Well, welcome back to the Green Hour. Today, we're joined by Peter Fernhead at the Concordia Annual Summit here in New York City during Climate Week. Peter, thank you so much for joining us. Today, we're going to talk about conservation and really conservation at scale throughout Africa. So the first question I think I'll ask you is, you know, in sustainability or conservation, you know, a lot of times we talk about that light bulb moment of when, you know, your mind kind of shifted and you wanted to go into the kind of work that you're going into. So for you, it looked like in your early life, like right early on, you developed a wildlife reserve at a very young age. So can you talk about that pivotal moment in your life and how it's got you to where you are today?
Well, thank you for having me. So I think my journey is a little bit that story of having a school teacher who can have a really profound impact on you as an individual. And it's, you know, growing up, born and growing up in Zimbabwe, I had a school teacher that was one of the country's leading ornithologists. And so when, you know, all my mates were out, you know, playing sport, I literally was doing bird ringing, bird photography, taxidermy. That was my love. And that's what I was right. doing every single day. And, at the age of 13, he said to me, you know, what do you think about, building a reserve on the school property? And I thought, you know, sounds like a great idea. Little did I know that that was going to be mostly done on the blood, sweat, and tears of schoolboys,
right.
because schools don't have money to build reserves.
Right.
So from a very early age, we were, building out the reserve, the roads, the dams, the fencing, reintroducing wildlife, doing all of the fire breaks, and that's what I loved doing. So, what was that moment? I don't know if there was ever was a single moment, but I just kind of felt that it always has been me and who I am as an individual.
Right. So yeah, you took that initial kind of moment of conservation at the school, and then you later on created this organization called the African Parks Network. I mean, that's why we're sitting here today and speaking. But in the year 2000, you co-founded this network. And today, I mean, you've grown your protection to 49 million acres across the continent. And I think, let me see what I wrote down. I think it's 22, you manage 22 parks across 12 countries. So could you just tell us, you know, what led you to create this organization or co-found this organization? And what are some of the accomplishments to date ever since 2000?
So the that whole journey, you've got it exactly right. All the numbers are exactly on. But I think that journey started with the realization of, that if a group of schoolboys with guidance of a really profound and very competent schoolmaster, if they can do it, well, then there's no reason that anyone else can't. So I think with that belief and that realization that we'd done it, obviously at a tiny scale in at a school, then why couldn't we do that at a larger scale? And having grown up, I did my master's in this whole area. I spent quite a long time at South African National Park. So that's the state institution that runs all the national parks in South Africa. And seeing what they were doing, seeing what we had done at school, it was not a difficult decision to set up an organization to be able to help the rest of Africa to do what I believe they needed to be done. And so we put a group of people together, all like-minded, all wanting to be part of that journey. And we set out and did it. What what took us the first 3 years was to convince the first government that what we were saying and what we were suggesting made sense and wasn't conservation heresy. Because so many colleagues were saying, this is conservation heresy. You know, only governments can manage national parks. Well, right. Well, why? And if you start to think about it, why? As long as the expertise are there and the clarity around what the objective is, then it's something where anyone should be able to do that. So it took us those first 3 years, and we're very grateful to the Zambian and Malawian governments for giving us those very first opportunities. And we set about doing what we said we would do. And in many ways, all that African Parks has become is that organization, but replicated in its scale. The 22 parks under management now, 12 different countries, a huge, huge area. And whatever the circumstances are in a particular country, those are always different. But the principles, the underlying principles of having good quality people, clarity of purpose, reward for excellent work, making sure that people who aren't doing a good job are managed out of the system, that those apply at each and every park level. And then equally, to make sure that the overall governance structure per park is in place, that the relationships with communities around the parks, that they equally are buying in to what we're doing. Because in as much as a government can give us a mandate to be able to manage one of their parks, what we call the de jure relationship, the de facto relationship is with communities. So they also have to buy into what you're going to achieve. And when you bring that together with the right amount of resourcing and the funding that's necessary to be able to make these things happen, it happens. And it's not that difficult to make it happen.
Right. All right. So again, those numbers, I mean, 22 parks across 12 countries. I mean, took you that first 3 years to kind of get the government to say, look, you can do this, right? And then you've grown it this much, which is pretty incredible. And then actually today, you're having an announcement, I think later on today, on a $1 billion initiative to scale conservations even further across the continent. So growing from 22 to 30 areas. So this is right in line with the United Nations 30 by 30 biodiversity goal. And it's just incredible. I mean, it's incredible to think about $1 billion that's going to be given to conserve even more land. So, I mean, I'll just cue it up and ask, you know, could you talk about this initiative, this big initiative that's coming today, and what it means for the continent of Africa?
Yeah. So that commitment of $1 billion is a little bit of a, we know what needs to be done. We know that we have got this is literally the decade, not even the decade, because we're talking about now 6 or 7 years before that 2030 timeline is with us. And in order to be able to make sure that anywhere near 30% of the planet is under nature in some form, the scale of action, the scale of the challenge has to be matched by the scale of the action. And that's what African Parks is, an organization that gets on the ground and does the work. So $1 billion, we know what we need to be able to do between now and 2030 to be able to scale up the impact that the organization's happening. And that's going to be $1 billion. So it's our commitment to African governments. It's our commitment to local communities that are living around those parks. It's a commitment to the international community. And it's an appeal to the global philanthropic community to get behind that initiative, because we know that we can make a difference. We have on the 22 parks, we can do 23, we can do 24, we can do 30. And if we can do 30, we can go beyond 30. So that's what we need to do. And it's incumbent on us. It's our responsibility. It's a moral imperative to scale. We can't be comfortable with where we're at, because that's what nature and the impacts on nature require of us today.
With a commitment like this, what do you, for the rest of the world, the rest of the continents around the world, what do you hope that leaders in the various continents see from a commitment like this and the work that you've done of, you know, already with 22 different areas across 12 countries, but going into, you know, 30 areas and this $1 billion investment, what do you hope the rest of the world can take from this and use in their own locations?
So to do what we do as an organization, as African Parks, we can only do what we do because we have relationships with governments that are saying, we are committed to this 20 by 30 objective. We need help. We can't do it on our own. So African Parks, please come and help us. So we've got 12 African governments that have said we need help. We want to get on the road and meet our obligations to the international community. So 12 governments, by committing to us, and by our reciprocal commitment to them, are saying we're on the road, we're about action, we're about making this happen. And I think that if every government, whether it's in Africa or where it's elsewhere, if we want to be able to make this commitment happen, there has to be a commitment to action, and action costs money. And there has to be the funding flow behind those who are making the difference on the ground.
So when you talk about action, I mean, one question I would have when looking at, you know, tracking the success of conservation, in my head, I'm like, how do you even metric it? How can you look at all these different areas that you're protecting and ensure that, you know, what's being said, like you said in the beginning, is actually happening? So what kind of metrics are in place? How do you track just the work that you're doing?
So we have a metric system. I think we've got 180, 200 different metrics that are tracked across every single park. And those are obviously the input level, because the input level creates an output, an outcome, and eventually an impact. So all of those metrics are over those four different areas. But ultimately, it's about making sure that the key impacts are making sure that the areas remain intact. The key wildlife species are all on the increase, obviously to a point, because then it kind of tapers off, and to make sure that local people are benefiting from that commitment. We have to remember that these huge areas of land represent a massive opportunity cost to the government and to the local people. And therefore, we've got to make sure that these areas are an economic asset to the country, even though there might be a financial liability to us. Right. And that's why we have to fundraise for it. And so the metrics cover all of those.
Yeah, and sustainability, we talk about if you can bridge the economic and the environmental together, then you can find a solution. And a lot of people can't really go against that. So making it financially viable, again, making it doable for the actual areas, socially as well, is a big thing. So, I just applaud you and applaud the work of your team and what you're doing, because, I mean, we're sitting here in the United States right now, and I think that we can take this as a case study, into things that we're doing.
Well, I hope that's the case. And, just to be clear, there is nothing that we do that is perfect. Every single day is the day that we make mistakes and we learn from them. And that's important, because then tomorrow we can improve, and the day after improve. So I think the way that we do things today compared to maybe 20 years ago, the quality of the operations, the professionalism behind it, is amazing. Sometimes, you know, even though I'm responsible for it, it's not because it's coming from me. It's coming from having good quality people in the organization, and they're lifting that bar continually. And there's nothing quite as rewarding as where you see something happen in the organization that was never your idea, you'd never intended, and you say, wow, isn't that amazing? And that's what happens when you crowd in good quality people and you give them the opportunity to fly.
So I guess the final question, final piece I would ask, you know, with this $1 billion initiative, I mean, now we understand what's going to happen, right? We're going to protect more areas, I think 8 more areas. I don't know how many countries that's over, but I know it's going to be 8 more areas. But for all the people listening, I mean, we could have people listening from any continent. We could have people, young people, older people. What do you hope inspires people that are listening to this through an initiative like this?
So I think the thing to get people to commit to is action in some way, and it can be either action in their personal lives and what they're doing and how they're doing it, or it can be in a passive way through money. And it doesn't matter if it's a single dollar, if it's $1 million, or if it's $100 million. Every single one of those dollars counts, when you pull it all together and you pull that initiative and you put it in the hands of competent people that have a mandate from government to get on and do the job, then really, really good things happen. So there's space for everyone in being part of a global solution.
Well, conservation at scale. Peter, thank you so much for joining the Green Hour today.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for having me.